Hey everybody, I'm Alicia and welcome to the Medicine in Color podcast, a platform where I highlight the voices of men and women of color in all aspects of medicine and elevate their stories for the world to hear. Let's get to it. What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Medicine in Color podcast. Thank you so very much for tuning in. It is another week. It is another opportunity to do something amazing this week. I hope that you all are stepping into your gifts today and every day, and that you are making room for your talent, no matter what your fears, your personal doubts, naysayers, or anything may say to try to stop you from doing that. So I hope you're having a wonderful week so far. Last week, I told you all that I was going to see Elaine Welteroth on her book tour for her new book, More Than Enough, Claiming Space for Who You Are, No Matter What They Say. And she was in conversation with Rekia Reynolds. And let me tell you, it was just wonderful. It was great to be in a room full of amazing women and feel the energy and the power just nestled into that space. The love and the joy in the room was palpable. And I wish that I could take that conversation, bottle it up, keep it with me whenever I need my cup to be refilled. It was just a phenomenal night, great session, and I really enjoyed it. So here are the things that my top takeaways. There's so many things, but here are my top takeaways. One is you can still be fierce and share times when you are fragile. I thought this was so poignant, particularly in the world of medicine, where we are trained to be tough and to keep our game face on in every situation. And we really pride ourselves on being strong and unshakable. And while those things are okay and necessary in many cases, there's this competing relationship between vulnerability and strength. And so we always want to be strong, but we need to also realize that there's strength and vulnerability. So be fierce. But it's also okay to share your more fragile moments with those who you trust to help cover you through those things. The other thing that she mentioned that I thought really stuck out was that life is a series of dreams realized. When I got accepted into medical school, I remember thinking, now what? Like, I've worked for this, and now what? What happens now that I've reached a goal? I've made it to another mountaintop, and what happens now? This dream is reality. Well, this is just one dream realized. And so there'll be new dreams. This is one dream in a series of dreams. There will be new goals, new mountaintops, and another after another after another. So it's just important to keep pushing, but to realize that life is a series of dreams realized, that maybe we do make it per se, but you can make it in multiple ways and in multiple times. And the last thing that she mentioned, she told a story from a book. She said, this quote was, "Don't chase the sexy, chase the enthusiasm." And the story that she talked about was how she got accepted to this really coveted internship at Essence Magazine. And shortly before she was scheduled to go to start that internship, she was offered another opportunity that she knew was just really right for her soul. She turned down Essence and went for what seemed like an all other area, like it just seemed like just a less of an opportunity. And it turned out to be exactly what she needed and where she needed to be. And it just really opened doors for her. So her advice was, don't chase what's popular. Don't chase the sexy, because it's great and it looks exciting. Chase where your passion and your enthusiasm are and follow your gut. So those are my top takeaways from that amazing conversation. Like I said, I wish I could bottle it up and like listen to it over and over and over again. I definitely wish that I had that book. There's a chapter in the book where she talks about graduating from college and you're like, what in the world am I going to do with my life? So I wish I had that book when I was graduating from college and launching into the world, so to speak. It's valuable now, but it definitely would have been gold then. So that was really great. In addition to this book, I've been audiobooking it. I also started listening to Malik Teal's Summer Refresh series on her My Taught You podcast. And the first episode really helped me evaluate places where I need to make some improvements and kind of step my game up. Not just step my game up, but really make some consistent improvements. And she mentioned soft skills like time management, communication, whether that be written, oral, or public speaking, critical thinking, problem solving, discipline. And so those are some of the things that we don't necessarily always think about. We often think about hard skills, like I know how to, do this computer software thing. I know how to do X, Y, and Z. But those soft skills are really necessary to kind of go to the next level. You need discipline. You need to be, you need to manage your time well. And that is truly, I mentioned this before, but time management is truly an issue for me. But, and really be able to like hone in on skills. So soft skills are important. So there's some soft skills that I know that I want to work on, and also some hard skills that I want to work on that will help me create better content for the podcast and make things look better and overall. So I want to ask you the question, something you can consider. What areas can you improve on this summer? And check out my leaks series. I'm not getting paid for this, but check out my leaks summer refresh series. It definitely helped me when I've started listening to it. So take some time to think about it. Maybe send me a DM or email of what you'll be working on to improve this summer. On another note, I am headed home to Georgia this week. I'm looking forward to being home, minus the heat, because it's hot down there. Like, it's hot. And folks in Philadelphia, like, complain about heat, but it's hot, like, real hot. So I'm headed home and I'm looking forward to that. And then also the Lessons Learned Roundtable event. Oh my goodness. So I mentioned that I was doing the series Lessons Learned. And the next episode in the series will focus on members of the class of 2022. And it's going to just be really great, really exciting. And it's really shaping up to be an amazing gathering of a few of us. So I'm just gathering a small group of students from across the 7 medical schools in the greater Philadelphia area. And I'm excited about that conversation we're going to have. And I can't wait to share that with y'all. So stay tuned for more details and for the episode release. And the other thing about Lessons Learned series is I am going to do a social campaign around the launch of that episode. So make sure you send me your videos. I mentioned in the last episode, but I want to mention it now. And I'll also post a separate episode about that campaign and post on social too. But send me your videos. A 60-second or less video for Instagram, and we're talking about the lesson that you learned, your name, the school you go to, or if you're not in school, maybe you're a resident, maybe you're a practicing physician, whatever it is, send me your lesson learned in this last academic year or the last year, and your advice that you would give to the next generation of folks coming in, so the class of 2023 and beyond. All right, so that's it on my end. On to today's episode. So today's guest is Dr. Adam Milam. He is currently a fourth-year anesthesiology resident in the LA area and currently serves as a chief resident as well as co-chair of the hospital's House Staff Executive Committee. Before starting his residency, Dr. Milam completed medical school at Wayne State University and his doctorate as well as master's degrees in public health at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. The brother has receipts, y'all. He got all the degrees and all the receipts to prove it. Dr. Milam has an extensive research background with over 50 peer-reviewed publications. Most recently, he was accepted into a fellowship in adult cardiothoracic anesthesiology at Cleveland Clinic. He is a proud native of Baltimore, Maryland. And when he's not beasting in his white coat, he's hiking in L.A., up Runyon Canyon, and traveling the world to share his research. Our conversation was phenomenal, and I know that you will be blessed by it. One more quick thing before Dr. Milam's conversation comes up. You will hear him say that he is a third-year resident. That was the case at the time of recording, but he is currently a fourth-year anesthesiology resident. So here's my conversation with Dr. Adam Milam. Enjoy. All right, Dr. Milam, thank you so very much for agreeing to be a part of the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question I typically ask everyone is, what do you do and why?
So I'm a third year anesthesiology resident. I always knew I wanted to be in the operating room. Mm-hmm. Thought maybe surgery in the past, but ultimately decided on anesthesiology just because it, brings together a lot of the things that I like, chemistry, math, and I get to be in the operating room. It's a flexible field, so you can be anywhere in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do right now.
Cool. So as a resident, as anesthesiology resident, like what does that entail? What is your day-to-day like? What are the inner workings of it?
Yeah, so most people think anesthesiologists put you to sleep for an operation and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Counting backwards from 100, but the job entails much more. So we're actually found in every part of the hospital. So anesthesiologists treat pain for OB. They prepare patients for surgery, like in the pre-op clinics, care for patients in the ICU, and also manage chronic pain patients. They're also now helping coordinate care after surgery, a concept called perioperative surgical home. And that's like a patient-centered model where the anesthesiologist takes care of the patient, you know, pre-op, throughout the operative process, and then post-op, and just helps coordinate that care.
Okay, cool. And do you have, so you're in third year, how long is your residency?
So it's a 4-year residency program. So some programs internship portion and then 3 years of anesthesiology. And some programs are categorical programs where you can spend the whole 4 years at one hospital. Okay. So I'm in a 4-year categorical residency program.
Got it. And do you plan to kind of hone in on a specific specialty or do you want to have the flexibility?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I'm actually in the fellowship process now, applying for fellowship. So for anesthesiology, you do it in a year in advance. So I'm applying for cardiac anesthesia.
Nice.
So finishing up the interviews this month, rank list in May, and then match in June.
Nice. And so you got all the degrees. You have a PhD and an MPH. Both from Johns Hopkins. And so what made you kind of go that route as opposed to just MD only?
Sure. So I actually started in undergrad. This is a pretty long answer, but I started in undergrad as a chemical and biomolecular engineering major.
Mm-hmm.
I did 4 semesters of engineering before I really realized it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And then I somehow stumbled upon the public health major. Which I didn't even know was a major at Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Kind of fell in love with public health and took some good courses. One of the courses was a community health class and was taught by Deborah Furholden, who became my mentor. And then I started doing work in her lab. It was called the Drug Investigations, Violence, and Environmental Strategies Lab. We mainly focused on how the built and social environment influenced youth and adolescent mental health and behavioral health.
Mm-hmm.
So the research was meaningful for me because it was used to develop policies and interventions that it could improve the health and well-being of the people in my city, Baltimore, which, you know, has a lot of different problems.
Yeah.
So I applied and was accepted to medical school after my junior year of undergrad, but I also applied for the master's program.
Mm-hmm.
Got accepted into med school, deferred for a year to complete my master's. And then some people told me, hey, you should apply for the PhD program.
Mm-hmm.
I applied for the PhD program, and then they offered me a spot on a training grant. So it was essentially a free PhD. So I rescinded my offer to med school and did the PhD. And then towards the end of my PhD program, I reapplied to med school, deferred for a year, finished the PhD, and then went to medical school.
Wow. That's amazing. So you are from Baltimore. How did your city influence the way in which you move in the world, the way in which your work that you do? How is Baltimore ingrained in who you are?
Yeah, I mean, it just taught me a lot, like resiliency, I think. Baltimore has been beat down so much, plagued by so many different problems, and, you know, continues to get better. And I think, you know, that spirit of like just pushing forward no matter what, I think Baltimore has taught me that. And then just, you know, the research that I do in Baltimore, I think can be applied to a lot of different urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've used that a lot in my research and, you know, how I interact in the hospital and just it's made me become passionate about different policy and interventions that, you know, can improve things in urban areas.
Yeah. Good deal. So let's talk about your research. you talked about the work that you do kind of being surrounded around youth and the environment and how the environment influences their lives and outcomes. So what projects have, I mean, you've had over 50
peer-reviewed journals. And so what projects have really stood out to you that you worked on, and what made you, I guess you kind of talked about what made you pursue those projects, but what kind of stand out to you as ways in which you can use your work to change your community?
So we did a study looking at youth passing alcohol outlets on the way to and from school. So in Baltimore, a lot of liquor stores open up at 6 a.m. And they also sell snacks and candy, which is a problem because children are passing by, you know, and going into liquor stores at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning as they, you know, get to school. And so we did one study and found that children passing liquor stores on the way to and from school were about 2 times more likely to feel unsafe going to school. And then they were exposed to, you know, alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs. And so this research, combined with some other research that I've done with my mentor, was used to change the zoning policy in Baltimore City. So they did a rewrite of the zoning code, and that was passed in 2016. And so that changed some of the policies regarding alcohol outlets, where they can locate, that they can't be in residential neighborhoods, restrictions so that youth and adolescents cannot purchase items mm-hmm. in liquor stores, any items. So that was something I was really proud of, just because it made an impact and essentially, you know, helped to inform the new zoning code.
Yeah, nice. That's amazing. That is amazing. And I'm also, I guess I'm also kind of, I'm from, of course, a city smaller than Baltimore. So hearing that like alcohol stores open that early is kind of a shocker. But then also thinking about, I used to live in New York, so I know that kids would go to the bodegas and things like that to grab food in the morning on the way to school. But it's really good that your work was able to influence policy and actually effect change in your city. So that's pretty great. That's pretty great. So in terms of, you said the word mentoring, you mentioned someone who influenced you to pursue the PhD program. So who's been a guide for you along your journey? Like who've been your mentors? How did you get those mentors? And how have you kind of cultivated those relationships?
Yeah, there's so many people to name here because no one can do this journey alone.
Yeah.
But like I said earlier, my mentor has been a big influence. And I started with her when I was an undergrad. And like I said, I've been doing research with her for probably about 10 to 12 years now.
Wow.
And so she's been a major influence, like how to guide, been a guide through my life professionally
mm-hmm.
And some of the career choices that I've made. But I've also found mentors within medicine. So at my medical school, a lot of the attendings, not even in my field, so some are in internal medicine, some are in pediatrics, but they, you know, help me, you know, navigate through medicine and figure out, you know, where I should go for fellowship, where I should do residency, and things like that. And I think they'll be a big help when it's ultimately time to pick a job. And so I think finding good mentors, and you can have multiple mentors, I think is a great idea, and it's essential for this journey in medicine.
Yeah, yeah. And so how would you recommend to someone, say, who's a pre-med or a current medical student, how do you recommend that they build relationships with mentors or find a mentor? So if you are just coming into medical school and you don't really know how to say, oh, I need somebody to mentor me, how do you recommend that happens?
Yeah, so I would just find someone who's fairly established because they'll have the connections, and then somebody that has some common things with you. So maybe you guys are from the same city, or you want to do the specialty that they practice in right now. And you might, you know, work with somebody and think that's going to be a mentor, and that might not work out. So it's, you know, it'll take some time, but I think just finding people who you can personally connect with, and people, like I said, who are already established because they have those connections,
mm-hmm.
Is the first step in finding a mentor.
Good deal. Good deal. So if you had to like pick so in terms of outside of medicine and mm-hmm. your friend circle, who's in your circle? How did you build those relationships? Are these people that you met, you know, along the way, from medical school or from your sit from Baltimore or whatever? So who's in your friend, like who are your people that are kind of making sure you're good and gassing you up?
So I have a pretty large circle. So it's, I still have, you know, several really close friends that I went to high school with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, there are a couple people from undergrad, a couple people from medical school, and then, you know, people that I've met here in Los Angeles since I've started residency. And it's important, just like having a good mentor is good to have, you know, a good circle. Because this journey, I mean, some days is really tough. Some months will be terrible. You can lose sight, but having a strong circle, I think, is essential. And so each of my friends kind of motivate me for different aspects of my life, whether it's, you know, fitness, eating right, going to church, taking some time outside of studying, doing residency. I mean, all of them are really needed to keep, you know, keep me going with this journey.
Yeah, yeah. So you said you said some days are going to be tough. What has been your like most difficult case or most difficult time as a physician?
Yeah, I think my most difficult case was probably last year. I did anesthesia for a lung transplant.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bilateral lung transplant, and it was off pump, so it was no cardiopulmonary bypass.
Mm.
And so it was an interesting case. It was my first lung transplant. And during the timeout for the surgery, the surgeon said, this is going to be a mini cold throughout the entire case. Like, you're going to be actively trying to keep this patient alive. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how the case went. It was a really difficult case. It was a long case. And I mean, we got through it and the patient did fine, but it really tested me. And you know, you have to have all your skills and just be aware of everything that's going on. So it was just a difficult, clinically difficult case for me.
Yeah, gotcha. And what has been the most rewarding case for you?
So I'm actually doing a pediatrics rotation now at Children's Hospital of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So doing anesthesia for a lot of the surgical cases for the peds population. And that's been pretty rewarding. Just because you have the patient and the parent, and the excitement that you see from the parent after, you know, the patient comes out of the operating room, and just interacting with the patients has been an amazing experience. Just seeing how grateful they are, and you know, happy that someone really, you know, set the time aside to explain things to them. Just because a lot of them haven't had good experiences with the medical system, so. This rotation has actually been a really rewarding experience.
Yeah, good deal. So the foundational idea of the podcast is to kind of uplift the future leaders in medicine and kind of give them something to hold on to as they move through this process. So yeah. If you had to give guidance to someone who's interested in medicine, but maybe is not sure that they can do it, or someone that's in this process and they're taking the board exams. and what guidance would you give pre-meds and current medical students? Like, what are your top three pieces of advice?
I would say stay focused. A lot of people have this dream to be a physician, but they can lose focus at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where your mentors and your circle comes into play, that you have to stay focused, because while people can do this, it's a tough career path. So that's one thing. The second thing is don't let anyone discourage you. Throughout this journey, I've had, you know, advisors say, hey, I don't think medicine is good for you, or you shouldn't apply this year, or you shouldn't do this residency. And you just have to follow your dreams and follow your passion. You know, take everyone's advice, but ultimately it's your life and your decision. So I think just don't be discouraged by others. And the other thing is, you're going to fail and you have to be okay with failure.
Mm.
I originally applied to do residency in orthopedic surgery, had interviews. I thought the interviews went well, and I actually didn't match into ortho residency. And, that was devastating match week.
Yeah,
I was planning on taking a year off instead of doing the SOAP process, but a position opened up, and I actually took it, and it's been a great experience. And I'm actually glad I didn't do orthopedic surgery residency.
Yeah.
I think this field of anesthesiology is much better suited for me. So I think everything works out in the end. And so you're going to fail. A lot of people up until medical school and through medical school have never experienced failure. So that first time might be devastating, but you have to pick yourself back up and just know that you are going to fail somewhere during this process.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Thank you for that. So two things. One, so you say you initially applied to orthopedic surgery. What made you not well, you said a position opened up. So let's go back. What is a SOAP process for those who don't know?
Yeah. So, the Monday of match week, you find out if you've matched into a position, mm-hmm. but you don't find out where. And after that, there's some unfilled positions or some positions that weren't open during the match process. Mm-hmm. And so, candidates who had applied that didn't successfully match had the opportunity to apply for these open positions from that Monday until that Thursday. And so you still have to interview, talk to them over the phone or Skype some way. And then they have all your application materials. And so you essentially go through the interview process pretty quickly during that week. And each day the hospitals can offer positions up until that Thursday. And so I actually accepted a position that wasn't offered during the match process and found out that Thursday before match, the actual match day.
Yeah.
Like I said, it worked out perfectly for me.
Yeah, nice, yeah. Nice. And so did you during the SOAP process, do you say, okay, I want to do a different type of residency? Or what made you choose anesthesiology programs over reapplying to ortho programs?
Sure. So for some of the more competitive programs like ENT, neurosurgery, orthopedic surgery, there's usually no unfilled positions. And so in order to get those positions again, you have to reapply the following year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that don't match into those specialties, that want to do those specialties, actually do that. So they wait a year, do research, do other clinical positions, and then reapply for the match the following year. Mm-hmm. And so I was considering that, but ultimately decided on anesthesiology. I knew it was something that I was interested in before. And like I said, my thing was I wanted to be in the operating room. So it worked out for me because I still got to do procedures. I still got to be in the operating room. And like I said, it's a very flexible field. So
nice, nice. Good deal. Good deal. All right. So let's talk about your life outside of medicine and the work that you do. So who are you outside of this when you're not being an amazing resident, where you're not being, let me ask you this question. So you're a junior chief resident. What does that mean?
Yeah. So, for our hospital, not everyone has junior chief residents. And so they help out with the tasks that are assigned to the chief residents. And then they have tasks specific to the role. So a lot of it's around scheduling, administrative tasks, like organizing journal club, inviting speakers. And you're also like a leader within the residency. So you help out with some of your more junior resident colleagues mm-hmm. who may be struggling or just need some advice and things like that. And we also serve on different committees at the hospital. So we have a house staff committee that works as a liaison between the administration and the residents. And so our junior chief resident serves on that committee. But it's a lot of administrative tasks and then more clinical tasks. So like I said, you work with the medical students in the operating room and some of your more junior colleagues.
Cool. Good deal. Good deal. And so now back to the question I was going to ask is, what is your life like outside of medicine?
Yeah. So it's not a huge amount of free time, but you do have free time as a resident. Mm-hmm. So locally, I like to go to Runyon Canyon in Los Angeles, and that's where I spend a lot of my time. I go to the beach when it's warm. Mm-hmm. Also like Malibu or Santa Monica. I like to travel, so each vacation block that I get, I try to go to a different international location. Mm-hmm. And so I've been able to do that since starting residency, and that's been a good time.
Nice. So on your social media, you will post like what you're listening to as you're running. So what, tell the folks, what are you listening to on your runs now?
Yeah, so I kind of listen to a little bit older rap. Not, I don't consider it old, but like J. Cole, Jay-Z, old Kanye.
Definitely not new Kanye.
Kendrick Lamar, they're all on my playlist.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I post a different song every morning while I'm in the gym. Yeah. At the crack of dawn.
Yeah. Good deal. Good deal. All right. So let's do some fun questions.
Okay.
All right. So if you had to choose a lifetime supply of one type of candy, what would it be and why?
I think it would be Reese Cups.
Okay.
I love peanut butter.
Me too.
I have to be in the freezer for like an hour.
So yeah.
I have to have them super cold. But yeah, a lifetime supply of Reese Cups would probably be it.
Okay. I like peanut M&Ms. If I'm going to eat candy, I like it to have nuts in it of some sort. And yeah. Like even if I buy peanut butter, I like crunchy peanut butter, not cream peanut butter.
Okay.
And I like it cold, like in the refrigerator. So yes, yeah. I feel you there. Yeah. What is your favorite book of all time?
Yeah, I think The Other Wes Moore. It's probably my
favorite. Oh, that was good. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, he's a good guy. He came to spoke at Hopkins a lot of times when I was there. Has done a lot of amazing work in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And so reading that book and looking at the parallels between Wes Moore, the activist, and the other Wes Moore who was incarcerated, just highlights the differences. One's environment can have on an individual.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what my research focuses on. Mm-hmm. Like identifying some of the deleterious parts of the built and social environment and trying to mitigate its effect on adolescents.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of my favorite books.
Yeah, that was a really good book. I read that summer of 2013. And I just remember the date. Like I remember that because I was reading a couple other books at the same time. But yes, it's an excellent book. Excellent book. If you do have time to watch television or Netflix, what would you binge? What are you binge watching on Netflix?
So I watch old shows actually. So I rewatched The Wire, which is set in Baltimore, probably about 5 or 6 times. And for some reason, I watch Frasier and Cheers a lot.
Okay.
so I've seen. All 13 seasons multiple times. So.
Okay. All right. And you say you travel to a lot of places. What is your favorite place that you traveled?
I think it was probably my most recent trip. I went to Nigeria for New Year's Eve and spent about a week and a half there. That was my second time in Africa. The first time was, just 2 months prior. I think that was my best trip just because everyone there embraced me. It was so much to do. The weather was great. It was just a great trip, and I definitely want to go back. So I think that was the favorite trip so far.
Yeah, nice. Okay. And you're a runner, so running shoes.
Oh, I'm not a runner.
Okay.
I do elliptical in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to Runyon Canyon. It's like a hike. And I don't necessarily run.
So all right.
I would call myself a runner.
Okay. All right. So, well, let's say you favorite workout shoe, like Nike, Adidas. What shoes do you really love?
So I wear the Nike Huaraches to work out in.
Okay.
Like those are comfortable. They're light. So they work out for me.
Okay, cool. Good deal. All right. So last question. I want to ask you this question. When was the last, you say you watched Frasier, so I wanted this associated. When was the last time you laughed so hard until it hurt?
Anytime I go home with my brothers and my sister, they are hilarious and they definitely keep me grounded. But they're just fun to be around. And so anytime we're together talking about old stories or old events, that's when I laugh. And like I said, it's good to be around them. So we get together every couple months because everyone's in different states right now.
Yeah.
And so that's always a good experience.
Cool.
Fun times.
Yeah, good deal. All right. So last question again. when it's all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
Yeah, so I want to be known as a great physician and a great researcher. But I think my legacy, I want to be able to help the people coming behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a passion of mine when I was in grad school, when I was in medical school, and now I'm doing residency. And a lot of the positions that I held have helped me meet that goal of mm-hmm. helping others behind me. So, you know, as chief resident, I'll be able to help with the interview and admission process for residency and, you know, help, you know, identify and hopefully recruit some minority candidates because diversity is a problem. And the same thing at my medical school, I was able to serve on a lot of committees that were focused on improving diversity. You know, in 2019, diversity within medicine is still a huge issue.
Yeah.
And it's been an enduring issue. And so I think my legacy, that's what I want to leave behind, like making sure I can help usher in a new generation
mm-hmm.
And make sure it's more diverse than when I've gone through, you know, medical school or residency or even grad school.
Yeah, nice. Good deal. Well, I want to say thank you again. Thank you for joining the podcast. Thank you for being a part and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. This was good. You know, my.